Hello there, comic book fans. Welcome to episode 43 of Comic Review Weekly, the podcast where you get the lowdown on comic books, hosted by me, Andy Slaughter, and also Marty Blevins and Brian Shearer. Comic Review Weekly is brought to you by the creative minds at Jackrabbit Studios. Like I said, Marty and Brian, home of Gravy Boy, the comic for folks who like a little hero and their heroes. Check it out at www.gravyboy.com. It is great to have you here. It's my goal to get you to try out a few new titles that you may not have otherwise considered, or possibly to save you a few dollars by helping you avoid a really bad comic book. We've got some great stuff lined up today. A revisioning of the controversial 90s Clone Saga story arc in Ultimate Spider-Man, followed by recent morbid events in the usually upbeat Runaways title, and finally, and I mean finally, the second issue of a title that really impressed me, Wonder Woman. First off, I never really got into the whole Clone Saga story that ran through all of the Spider-Man titles in the mid to late 90s. I may have picked up one or two issues at the beginning, but I never really got into it. According to most historical accounts, I sure didn't miss much. The Spider-Man Clone Saga is generally agreed to be one of the worst things to ever happen to the wall crawler. We can argue all day about our personal tastes in superhero comics, but the facts are that in the aftermath of this story arc, sales for the Spider-Man books reached all-time lows and stayed that way for years. With that in mind, superstar writer Brian Michael Bendis is reusing the basic themes of the Clone Saga in the most recent issues of Ultimate Spider-Man. It starts in issue 97, where after some romantic tension between Peter, Mary Jane, and his new girlfriend, ex-girl Kitty Pryde, he is attacked in the mall by an ultimate version of the classic Spidey villain, the Scorpion. After a heated battle, with policemen blaming Spider-Man in all-too-familiar fashion, our hero discovers that the face behind the Scorpion's mask is none other than his own. Throughout the battle, the Scorpion incoherently babbles nonsense. While this is happening, Mary Jane is kidnapped in her own home. In issue 98, Peter takes his mysterious unconscious lookalike to the headquarters of the Ultimate Fantastic Four so geniuses Mr. Fantastic and Sue Storm can take a closer look at him. Peter is, understandably, wrought with stress. To help him solve this puzzle, he once again reveals his identity, this time to the Fantastic Four. Reed learns that this Scorpion character is a 94% match with Peter, a fact that upon returning home, Peter finds out from Aunt May that Mary Jane has gone missing, and he leaves immediately to investigate. While searching the rooftops at night, he encounters a girl wearing a slightly feminized version of the famous black symbiote costume that the regular Spider-Man wore back in the 1980s. She has identical powers to his and a similar sense of humor. In a frantic state of mind, Peter attacks her, but she doesn't really seem to want to harm him. She speaks in cryptic riddles, and at the end of their encounter, the girl agrees to help Peter find Mary Jane. As for Mary Jane, she is being held captive by what appears to be an insane, disfigured clone of Peter, who wants to turn her into a being with special powers like himself. So it's kind of like he has the same desires as the real Peter, wanting to be with Mary Jane, but not wanting her to be hurt. What's the solution? For a deranged psycho, it's to give her powers, in the same place where Spider-Man received his, in the old Oscorp lab. Anyway, the issue ends when Peter decides to check out his old house, the one he and Aunt May moved away from months ago. Guess who's there waiting for him? Spoilers ahead. Turn away if you haven't read this yet, and if you really, really care. Ready? Okay? Gwen Stacy is there waiting for him. The same Gwen Stacy who was killed by the creature Carnage in Peter's backyard. Well, luckily I bought most of these issues at once, so I didn't have to wait a whole month to finish off that cliffhanger. In issue 99, we pick back up where the last one left off. At this point, Peter thinks he is going crazy, and Gwen has no memory from up until right before she died. She tries to remember what happened and only sees flashes of someone shooting at her. As soon as Peter begins to calm down a little, Aunt May shows up and pretty much freaks out. He tries to calmly explain things to her and begins by saying, "I'm Spider-Man. I've always been Spider-Man." Then, as he moves on to try and explain how Gwen could be standing before them alive, Aunt May pulls a Buffy's mom and basically tells him to get the hell out of the house. She tells both him and Gwen to get out, actually pretty much in a state of shock at the amount of lies that have been involved here. Then, as if that wasn't crazy enough, another person thought to be dead shows up at the door, and it's Richard Parker, Peter's father. Almost nonchalantly, he walks in the door and says, "Hiya, kid." What is even more interesting, Aunt May doesn't even seem surprised. She gives him a loathing yet knowing look and tells him to take his son and get out. It's as if the two share some kind of secret. Like I said, very interesting, and although Ultimate Spider-Man is the candy store entertainment of comics, it's quite suspenseful. I have my theories on why Aunt May is so familiar with Richard, but I'm not going to share them quite yet. I'll give you a hint, though. It involves a little Marvel miniseries written by Mark Millar from, about 2002 or so. It's called Trouble. Leading up to the landmark issue number 100 of Ultimate Spider-Man, writer Brian Michael Bendis and artist Mark Bagley are pulling out all the stops for a truly awesome climax. By the way, kudos to Mark Bagley on penciling almost every issue of this book since number one. Nobody has long-term runs on a regular superhero book like that anymore. His dedication and timely professionalism have really paid off for Ultimate Spidey fans. I haven't regularly read this book for a very long time, and I don't know if I'll start after this arc. My experience with the Marvel books, by and large, is that they have all the setup and changes that make you go, "Oh my goodness," but then they are rendered null and void by having, well, dead characters coming back to life all the time. But here, right now, this is kind of cool. The twist of Gwen coming back is a bit underwhelming, but the dynamic between Peter and Aunt May is intense. By revisiting a famous clunker of a story, Bendis is actually showing off what he does best, in my opinion. And what he does best is put hip, believable dialogue into classic characters and lacing the plot with capable action sequences. I give it 4 out of 5 stars. Next up, let's look at the long-delayed second issue of the one-year-later relaunch of Wonder Woman, written by Alan Heinberg and artwork by Terry and Rachel Dodson. Last issue, Donna Troy was acting in Wonder Woman's absence and attempted a rescue of Steve Trevor. She was ambushed by the Cheetah, Giganta, and Dr. Psycho all at once. With Donna now missing, Federal Agent Nemesis meets his new partner, Diana Prince, a secret identity of the former Wonder Woman. This issue opens with a flashback of Donna Troy and Cassie Sandsmark, that's Wonder Girl, as Teen Titan fans know, fighting some villains while Diana Prince and Batman steadily watch in the background. Bats and Diana exchange some dialogue, and the Dark Knight even cracks a smile. Bruce has helped her gain a new identity and learn to be herself for a while Donna takes her place. Then, the reader is bounced to the present. Nemesis and Diana review the case of Donna's disappearance, basically providing more background into the three villains involved and recounting the events of the first issue. Diana recommends calling in some of the big guns, Green Lantern, Batman, and Superman, to help out with this. Well, I guess that didn't go over too well, because the next thing you know, Diana and Nemesis are thrown into conflict with the villains in question as they attempt to warn Wonder Girl that she might be the next one to disappear. When Diana first approaches Cassie to warn her, Cassie reacts emotionally. She accuses Diana of deserting them, leaving them to fend for themselves against the dangerous foes of Wonder Woman. Then Giganta launches an all-out King Kong-style rampage on the city, demanding that Wonder Woman show herself. Giganta wears Donna Troy around her neck, attached to a chain, and Dr. Psycho uses his telepathic powers to appear as Cassie's former boyfriend, the now-deceased Connor Kent. And then he punches Cassie off a building. So at this point, Diana has had just about enough. She takes off her federal agent sunglasses and is about to change into her Wonder Woman threads when another heroic legend appears, Hercules. Has he been sent by the gods of Paradise Island to take Diana's place? Nah, I don't think so either, but the final splash page is a fine conclusion to this escalating super drama. Writer Alan Heinberg is proving himself to be a skilled craftsman in the trade of comic writing. As the Who is Wonder Woman story arc continues, he has not disappointed this reviewer. Even after the extended wait for this book, I can't honestly say that this is a predictable story. I mean, when this is over, do I know who will take up the role of Wonder Woman? Not necessarily. Charlotte will probably be Diana just because it has been her for so long and DC isn't probably going to replace one of their big three. But I'm still held in a bit of suspense for this. Not only is the personal conflict believable and not over the top, but the action sequences are wild and, like I said, unpredictable. The Dodsons continue to wow me with their artistic range. One little nitpick, though, is that pretty much all of their women have exactly the same super, supermodel body type. I know it's Wonder Woman and all, but everybody, with the exception of mind rapist Dr. Psycho, is stunningly gorgeous. Is everybody a god and goddess? What can I say? It's comics. Still, I give this one 5 out of 5 stars for quality. And I didn't mention it earlier. Speaking of supermodels in comic books, guess who out of the Runaways in the most recent story arc? Guess who got killed?
Dom DeLuise.
You're close. It's just kidding. It was Gertrude Yorks who was the only member of that group that had any weight on her.
Of course. I don't see what the problem is here.
She was a great character. Now, you know, I'm not going to go on a tangent of character deaths in comic books or darkness or anything like that. At least not for Runaways, because, you know, if anybody's been listening to this show knows that I'm a big Runaways fan. But, she got killed. And I was surprised. She got killed.
She wouldn't lose the weight. She got herself killed.
They have strict membership requirements in the Runaways. Well, the other girls, okay, except for Molly, who's like, I don't know, 13 or 12 or something, there's the witch. You can't kill her. There's the teenage witch. She's got this staff that she can like pull out of herself.
Yeah, I'm really not all that familiar with Runaways.
Okay, but, okay. Nico. Nico. And then there's Carolina, who's like this alien. Both of them are like super skinny, tall. They look like those teen models that are just, you know,
right,
anorexic. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I mean, I know Brian, you know, they had a reason for that, but I just think it's kind of, I don't know. I thought Gert's extra weight, her personality, it really gave her character. You know, she had like a sense of humor and I don't know. I just think she was more realistic, and I appreciate realism in that sense.
You're right. Well, I'm sorry. I am amazed though that you gave Wonder Woman 5 stars. It's rare that a comic gets 5 stars from Andy Slaughter.
I'll tell you. Yeah. I don't necessarily grade all books exactly the same. I mean, sometimes it has to do with how entertaining I find this. And you know what? I mean, if I'm not regularly collecting something and a book wows me to the point of, well, I gotta have this, you know, I gotta keep my eye out for this, because I actually care about what happens. I actually think that's interesting. I think that the total package here, the long waits notwithstanding, deserves 5 stars, or at the very least 4.5. I mean, it could go either way. I try not to do the half thing, because some people don't like that, and you know, I like to do the whole numbers. But it could be a 4.5 to a 5, just because of the total quality. Alan Heinberg just has a lot. I mean, he's created interest for me in a character that I've never read or kept up with.
Right.
There's no real, There's a little bit of continuity, but he gives you enough to go on and be interested.
Okay. Well, I mean, I like the first issue of Wonder Woman. I still haven't picked this one up. I mean, the first one I thought was great. The art is beautiful. I mean,
absolutely, you know, absolutely.
The stereotypical supermodelness, notwithstanding,
it's done well. Hey, I mean, if you're gonna do it, you know, the Dodsons do that stuff like awesome. I'm not saying there's anything necessarily wrong with that, but you know,
right? Okay.
But yeah, so, it's a nice book.
Interesting. And I don't think, did you mention? I don't think you. I know you mentioned that. The Bendis-Bagley team was on that book for a long time, but it's my understanding they hold the longest record period for
really?
A creative team on a single title.
Yes. Like beating out Stan Lee and Jack Kirby back in the day?
Because they've been on there since the beginning.
They will have been on there for 100 issues.
And then they're, you know, they're going their separate ways, aren't they?
I don't know. In the advanced solicits, I believe Bagley is going to be on a few more issues, at least to finish up the clone saga
right.
arc, because that's going to go past issue 100.
All right. But yeah, that's actually one of my favorite books, Ultimate Spider-Man, just because it's such a fun story.
It is.
And I'm
it really is.
Of heavy stories.
Yeah, totally.
So
totally. I mean, it's not. You
and
know,
I haven't read 99 yet, but now I know what happens, which is okay. Because I'm still going to read it and I'll still enjoy it. Because
well, I didn't cover every minute detail. There's still stuff that yeah. you'll enjoy most of. But yeah, you're right. Ultimate Spider-Man is just a fun book and it's consistent.
Yeah, it's
you know, consistent
good.
Is good. It's yeah. consistently good.
It's consistently good and it comes out regularly and you know what you're getting. You know why you're buying this book.
Exactly.
And you know you're going to like
exactly.
it.
Exactly. I'm not gonna knock that. Speaking of heavy storylines, not gonna spend a lot of time on this, but I want to mention Walking Dead again.
Okay, feel free. I haven't All right. read Walking Dead in a while.
Well, Walking Dead has basically become like a freaking demented, close to, you know. X-rated. No, it's not X-rated in the sense that it shows nudity or anything
X-rated
like that.
In the sense that
it's the subject matter is just freaking heavy. As I mean, basically, the characters they eventually found safety in a prison
right,
after of course after a serial killer like chopping off little girls' heads and
right.
you know showing all that and stuff. That was nice. But now you know they're in the prison and they go out to this parking lot right to get gasoline because they got to get gasoline to fuel this generator. And they see a helicopter. And three of them, Rick, the leader, Glenn, who's like a really smart scavenger guy, and Michonne, who is this tough, you know, African-American ninja chick who's kind of mysterious, she goes out there too. And they all go out there. They're trying to track this thing down in a car first. The car gets stuck. They track them down on foot. The helicopter crashes. But the survivors are gone. Somebody's carried them off. Not zombies, but somebody's carried them off. They track the footprints to another community of survivors. But this community, unfortunately, hasn't remained as emotionally stable, if you could call it that, as Rick's group, because they've basically made zombie fighting a spectator sport. But
yeah.
any new people that come into the community, they're fed to zombies.
Oh.
Unfortunately, though, in Michonne's case, it seems like you have to get raped before that happens.
Oh, okay.
And that's just something, I'm sorry, I know, I mean, it's... You know, it's supposed to be realistic and all that, but that kind of stuff just, you know, when you're actually showing it, and you know, you've got the character there bleeding, especially you know, here in this area, we've got this whole Duke lacrosse team scandal. It just kind of, I don't know. I mean, within the story, I guess it makes sense because these guys, the guys who were beating them, Rick gets his hand chopped off. By the way, as if
well,
enough
now,
bad things.
That's just more room for that chainsaw to attach to his arm. And,
I know. maybe that's where Robert Kirkman is going with this. Maybe so. But you know, it's just getting to the point where they're all going to kill themselves because there's not enough comic relief. You know, it's just is completely, yeah.
Yeah, I've said this before. I don't like dark comics. Period. I just don't. My theory is, if I want dark, I'll watch CNN, and I read comics for fun. So, you know, that's just me. So I probably won't be picking up. I liked the first trade paperback of Walking Dead.
That was fantastic.
I really liked it, but you know, I picked up. I didn't read it for a while, and then I picked up one where they're in the prison, and I'm just like, I don't want to read this.
Well, it's just.
You know what made the first one so interesting was just for me was the suspense of why are they all zombies? What's going to happen? You know, it just pulled you along. You didn't know what was going on, but now it sounds like it's just like, how many more bad things can we make
exactly
happen to these people?
Exactly. It seems like the whole purpose of this book is to turn everybody into psychos, to make everybody's, you know, life completely miserable. And I'm not saying that your life wouldn't be miserable if zombies took over the world and you were alive. You know, it probably would. But, you know, if you were in their situation, there would be thing, you know, I think that these people are, if they've been through this, and some of them have significant others, they have relationships, they have things that they can hang on to make their lives better. But it's like they keep choosing to accept the worst possible reality.
I don't know, at what point does that become just so unbelievable? Because, you know, you have people in war that see horrible things.
Yeah.
And they're in situations, they're not zombies, but they're in really bad situations, and everybody doesn't turn psycho.
Exactly, you know, exactly.
Just, I mean, people have defense mechanisms to where they either shut down or they go into survival mode, but you don't find people just totally going crazy and killing each other who's on the same side against a common enemy.
Mm-hmm.
But what do I know? What do I know? Nothing, that's what. But, let's talk about something a little more lighthearted.
yeah, before we break out the scotch and have to...
I'll tell you why.
I can't read this anymore.
So, you know, I downloaded... I've got a bunch of old arcade games on...
oh, sweet.
...that I've been playing, and one of them is Pac-Land. Do you remember Pac-Land?
I remember Pac-Man.
No, Pac-Man. Pac-Land. It's the game where Pac-Man, it's a side-scrolling game, is going through Pac-Land. I'm not exactly sure what for. This game used to be at Putt-Putt, and I used to go and play. This was my favorite game. And I used to go and stake out this game.
Putt-Putt, that's awesome.
You remember Putt-Putt?
Yeah, dude, yeah. Putt-Putt's awesome.
Do they have Putt-Putts everywhere? Is that like a chain, or was that just...
They still have one in my... Well, I think a lot of them closed down, but I think they still have one in my hometown of Wilson.
Really?
Yeah.
Was that a southern thing, or how widespread is Putt-Putt?
I have no
miniature
idea.
Miniature golf, for those of you who don't know.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of ghetto miniature golf.
But back in the day, that's all there was. Back in the 80s,
yeah.
And they had, you know, the arcades, and like I would go in and I would stake out the Pac-Man game. And if anybody was on there, I'd sit there and wait until they left so I could play Pac-Land. And the thing is, you're going and you're running through the town, jumping over ghosts, driving cars, and then you have to jump over this pool and stuff, and then you go through this magical door where this fairy gives you these shoes that let you jump really high so that you can go back the same way you came and jump really high and get back easy. And then the next level is going back the other way. But the thing is, I can never get back the other way. And so I've been playing this lately, trying to get past this humongous swimming pool that that you have to jump, and you have to keep hitting jump in the direction, the arrow, to get so you keep yourself up till you come down the other
yeah,
side.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To see what else she's getting. She's going to give me another pair of shoes. I don't know. And I refuse to go on the internet and find out, because this is the one thing from my childhood, the one unanswered question that I can answer myself, and I am determined to get past this. But so far, to no avail. And there are like six levels, and I can choose the level and stuff. But I've got to find out what that fairy's going to give me.
Yeah.
I think it's just another pair of shoes, and I'm going to be really disappointed.
My whole childhood is a lie!
I was playing it for this. But yeah, I've got like a ton of games.
Old arcade games rock.
The only game, if there was one game that I could get in console form, the big standalone, mm-hmm. would be Paperboy. And the reason,
Paperboy,
do you remember Paperboy?
Yeah, yeah.
The only reason is because the only way you can actually play Paperboy is with the handlebars that move side to side. Any other way just doesn't work. It's just not the same. So I've been trying to go back and relive my childhood by conquering these games.
Every once in a while, I kind of do something like that. I still have my original 8-bit Nintendo.
Oh, I do too.
There it is. There it is. Do you have any games for it?
Right there. Up top shelf. I've got, I've got a decent number.
That's
of
right,
games.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got Mega Man 2. That was one of my favorites, Mega
Man
2.
Yeah, Mega Man was good. I beat Mega Man. I think I still have a little card with all the cheat the codes to get into every level.
Did you ever get a Game Genie? The original Game Genie
that
attached onto the cartridge?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, my one of my friends had one of those. But yeah, one of my favorites was Castlevania. Original Castlevania.
Let me tell you a story about Castlevania, which isn't really a story about Castlevania as much as it is a story about how gullible I was as a kid. How trusting a youth I was.
Uh-huh.
That I had a friend who had Castlevania and I wanted to borrow it. This was 7th grade. And every day after school, he would tell me that he was going to his house to get Castlevania for me, and I would wait.
Really?
He was just going home. He was never coming back with Castlevania.
That's funny. I actually have a story similar to that. You know, where I was just very gullible too, and.
It's just, you know, I was brought up that if you're going to do something, if you tell them they're going to do it, and you're going to go do it, and you come back. You don't tell someone that you're going to come back and make them wait at school forever and then just with no intention of going back.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I have. Every time I think of Castlevania, it's the first thing. I can still picture myself by the lockers waiting for that kid who would never come back with Castlevania.
He'd never come back with it. No, he'd just laugh at you.
Yeah. Well, in my yearbook that year, he wrote, "You're never getting Castlevania." Oh, punk. That's when I turned into my jaded 8th grade self. Quit asking people for things. But, I never got to partake of the Castlevania. I had 3D World Runner. Did you ever play that one?
Bizarre I remember game. That, but it looked kind of ghetto, so I didn't play it.
Well, that makes me feel great.
It's my favorite game.
But it had the glasses, and you could, you know.
Okay, maybe I'm thinking of something else.
You're looking. What view is that? Third person view, but you're behind the person.
But you never really move. The screen just comes to you.
Yes, and you move this way or that way. You're jumping over things, and the game I always wanted was pro wrestling. Which I never got. That was my neighbors had that one. Of course, you can download all these now on your computer and play them.
That's true. That's true.
But I'm trying to remember. Zelda was, I think, one of my favorite game.
Mm-hmm.
Zelda's just an awesome game.
Metroid was an awesome.
I never
I
really got
one.
Into Metroid. I don't know. I guess just because I didn't buy it.
That was only the only ones I could beat on my own. Like, I did not, there were not very many video games that I could complete on my own. Other people were saying, I've gotten to this stage and you can't even do that. I was like, no, I don't. Castlevania.
I beat Zelda.
You did? Okay.
Yeah. I beat Super Mario Brothers. That took me forever. I mean, that was pretty much a concerted effort throughout my childhood, which culminated in the defeat of Bowser. Contra. The only reason I beat Contra was because of up, up, down, down,
up,
left,
up,
left,
down,
left,
down,
B, A, B, A, select, start,
yep.
Which is ingrained in my head. If you need to know how to get 30 in Contra, but now,
seriously.
Some skills you never lose, because now I can take like two men, right now I could hook up the Nintendo, put Contra in, and I could beat Contra with
Are
two
you serious?
Men. Oh yeah, I just go right through it, and like it took me forever to beat it as a kid. But it's just one of those skills. It's just something. There's something in life that I don't know because I know how to beat Contra that
bad. Dude,
past.
We ought to hook that up and like play it sometime.
I'm serious.
Dude, get some. Yeah, that'd be cool. Like, the Contra had a sequel, Super C. I never had the original.
Yeah.
I bought the second one, but they didn't have that code. They didn't have the code to get 30 men. They had a code where you could get like five.
You know that up, up, down, down, left, right, B-A, B-A, select, start, dot com is taken.
What?
Yeah. I looked it up one time. I was like, me and Marty were talking. I was like, oh, yeah. I wonder if anybody got that. Oh, they have.
What's the website for?
I didn't look. I'm scared. It should be cheat codes. But, yeah, I actually got for Xbox, what is it, Medal of Honor Frontline? Is that the name of it? Front? No, it's over there somewhere. Anyway, I don't know. Maybe I'm retarded. But it is so incredibly hard without the invincibility code that I cannot. I almost... It was given to me for Christmas, and I tried playing it so many times. I got so mad because I could not get off the beach at Normandy. Like, you land, you die. You mm-hmm. land, you die. You land, you die. And I finally went online and found that I'm like, well, I've got this game, and I've never really been anywhere, so I'm just going to play it. I'm going to cheat and go through the whole thing. It's all right once, you know, you cheat, but maybe is there anybody out there that has played this game and has been able to do anything with it without the cheat code?
That's right, listeners. You have to email us. If you have played this game and gotten through it without the cheat codes, you have to let us know.
Because I can't do it. But yeah, I for the last 6 months, really all I've been playing, actually for the last year, all I've been playing is Battlefront, Star Wars Battlefront, which is
that's an awesome game. That's
a great game. Battlefront, Battlefront 2. Now, Halo 3 might make me break down and save up for
They're coming out with the...
For Xbox 360.
Yeah.
But so far, that's that's gonna be hard because that's gonna be the only game that I see in the reasonable future that would be make it worth buying that console, spending all that money.
So then we won't see you for a couple of months.
You probably won't see me for 6 months. No, I don't know. I don't know. There was a while there where all me and all my Halo friends were playing online a lot. And,
oh yeah! Didn't you get kicked out of a group? A Halo group?
That's not, I think I did. Yes, I did. Get kicked out of a Halo. I forgot. Thank you for bringing that up. That's a painful memory. Hey, how stupid is that?
I'm sorry.
Who gets kicked out of a Halo?
It was only because you had too much of a life at the time. If
you're
I'm not mistaken.
You're not playing enough. You're not spending enough time. Sorry that I'm trying to do things like make comics and, have a job and be married and things, but yeah. So, I guess that'll do it for this episode. We'll wind things down. I think people might be tired of us mourning our lack of gaming skills, but, if you want to get in touch with us, you can email Andy at...
Andy@gravyboy.com.
Or you can email me at Brian@gravyboy.com. And if you miss Marty, you can email him at Marty@gravyboy.com. We also have a voicemail number if you want to give us a voicemail. And if we get some, we'll put a few of them on the air if you leave them. It's 208-692-5102 is our voicemail. So Andy, any final word for us?
Have a great week, everybody.